I'm particularly happy to be able to introduce our speaker tonight for two reasons. First, as a graduate student at the University of Chicago, he was my major professor, and I have often felt that on various occasions he took a good deal of pleasure in putting me on the spot. Now I find that I am in a position, as a result of a certain amount of coercion here, in putting him not on the spot, but at least on the platform. The second reason is because he is unusually well qualified to speak on the field and the area of the discussion tonight. If any of you have visited Field Museum, and especially the southeast corner of the main floor, you've seen the remarkable collections of this area. Collections of hundreds of remarkably fine specimens which were made by Professor Cole when he was curator of Southeastern Asia ethnology at Field Museum years ago. These collections are undoubtedly some of the finest in the country today. Now, he also, after that, moved to Chicago, the University of Chicago, where he became chairman of the department. And in this capacity, over a period of 19 years, a large number of students came under his tutelage and direction. In the last 2 or 3 years, he has been retired. And since retiring, he tells me, he has been able to do more work even than he did while he was at work there. I'd like to remind you that after his talk, we would be very glad to have any of you who would like to meet him, and Mrs. Cole, who is with him tonight, come to the music room on the second floor of the Illini Union Building, where they will be and will be glad to meet you. The subject of the talk tonight is Peoples and Politics of Southeastern Asia. The speaker, Professor Faye Cooper Cole, Professor Emeritus of the University of Chicago Department of Anthropology.
Friends, I don't quite know how I let myself in for the topic that was announced, the people and politics of Southeast Asia, for I shall be forced to at least to attempt in an hour to give you materials which I sometimes succeeded in getting over, at least in part, to my graduate students in 35 or 40 lectures. It means that I shall have to rather sharply define and cut the field, and that I shall have to do, as one of my former professors used to say, you'll have to take time to be brief. The field I shall cover tonight is, again, quite arbitrary. I shall confine my talk primarily to that portion of Southeast Asia which is known as Malaysia. That is, I shall take in the Philippines and coming south from the Philippines through Borneo, Java, Sumatra, the line of islands that run over here to the great island of New Guinea, making up the Dutch East Indies, and British Malaya. And then more briefly, we will touch on Siam and French Indochina. I shall not come over to touch on Burma, except incidentally, nor shall I attempt to go north of Indochina. The reasons for this are several. One is that the district known as Malaysia is one that is better known to me than any other part of Southeast Asia. A second is that whereas we might extend the field still further, I believe that in this district, which I have just indicated in the map, we shall be dealing with an area which is definitely to be in the history, which is in the making, in the next week or the next weeks or next months to come. You all have a fairly good idea of Korea and what has been going on there. You have heard a good deal about the situation in Formosa. China, of course, has been very much in the light. But I find that the district, the huge district known as Malaysia, with a population of something more than 80 million, and the district of Siam and French Indochina, with even a larger population, is a district very little understood or known by Americans. I think it is desirable. There are many ways in which such a topic might be tackled in the course of an hour, but I think that it's highly desirable that we should attempt, at least in the beginning of the talk and perhaps as the major emphasis of the talk, to get some idea as to the background of these peoples, something as to the situation which has led up to the present peoples and the life which they are leading. Because if we understand their background, then perhaps we will be better able to appraise the things which are likely to happen. Perhaps we shall better understand the forces which are at work, or which probably will be at work in the not-distant future. If we define the area as I have indicated, then the greater portion of this area, that is, from Formosa south through the Philippines to the Dutch Indies and coming on up to the Malay Peninsula, the greater portion of this lies as a sort of outer reef or barrier to the coast of Indochina. As a matter of fact, they are or were at one time, nearly all of these islands formed a part of the Asiatic mainland. And there were periods, and perhaps several periods, when land connections existed through the Malay Peninsula to Sumatra, then through Java, up through the Celebes, up to the Philippines, and several times connections with Borneo and some of the islands still further to the east. This is established in many ways. The geologists tell us that during the several periods, but certainly during the glaciations, that land connections existed because of the withdrawal of great bodies of water, a great deal of water from the seas, and some changes in land levels, with the result that in many places, the islands were connected with one another and often with the mainland itself. There are many places, for instance, out here in the Java Sea, where a boat can anchor out of sight of land. They're very shallow seas, and a change of rather a few meters would result in land connections here at the peninsula and through other sections, so that plants and animals might move readily across. As a matter of fact, Merrill, the botanist, late of Harvard, at that time head of the Philippine Bureau of Science, showed or identified more than 6,000 plants which had traveled the old land route from Asia, the Asiatic mainland, up into the Philippines. And for a shorter period, some of the plants which came down when there were land connections from the northern Philippines through the Babayanes and Batani to Formosa and to the China coast. The zoologists find much the same sort of story. There are many animals which must have traveled the land bridges. For instance, the tiger, which is found here in the Malay Peninsula and found again here in Sumatra, the two are practically identical, leaving very little chance for specialization in the short period. The elephants, separation. The elephants on the peninsula are those which are found in Sumatra. And the orangutan, which formerly was here and is now in Sumatra, is found again over in Borneo. And so we might go on and on. I haven't time for the proof, but I think that it is clear. I shall have to be somewhat dogmatic in a good many things I say tonight because I haven't time to go into all the evidence. But I think it's clear that land connections existed over large sections which are now separated by sea. And it is quite probable, in fact it is quite certain, that man, early man, likewise made his way across land bridges which no longer exist. Speaking of man, we haven't time to go into the very interesting story of the earliest men, but they certainly were in this part of the world. In the island of Java, you will remember that way back when, in the 90s, that we had the discovery here of the skull cap, the femur, the teeth, which led to the declaration that a new ape man had been found, the Pithecanthropus erectus. In later years, other individuals have been found until it's very clear that we are dealing with a certain type of variety of mankind, and one very closely related to the Sinanthropus finds up in China. It is also clear that, and this would take us back perhaps a half a million years for man in this part of the world, it is also clear that as late as the third interglacial time, that a kind of man, a race of mankind, very closely related, very similar, in fact, to Neanderthal man of Europe, existed here in this part of the world, certainly on the island of Java. A number of the skeletons of these individuals have been found. And then in later glacial times, we have the other fossil forms, which connect up very closely to forms found down here in the great continent of, or island of New Guinea. Well, we haven't time to deal with these early forms of life more than to indicate that this part of the world certainly was peopled, or at least there were individuals then here of a very primitive type. At a still later period, but perhaps while the land connections existed, it seems probable that the great blacks who occupied the island of New Guinea spread across this district, and then later under the pressure of population moved on and on, leaving a trace of their blood, but still not holding any of this territory until you come to New Guinea itself. On the other hand, another group of blacks, the Negritos or Pygmies, did either travel with the big blacks or certainly not very far behind them, and came into this territory where they still exist in the Andaman Islands, in the Malay Peninsula, in various parts of the Philippines, and they have left a trace of their blood over this whole territory. Of them we have little to say. They are among the most primitive of existing human beings. They are perfectly good little Negroes, except that they have round heads instead of the longer heads of most of the Negroes, that they are very short in stature. I won't try to go into figures, but the tallest of the men coming perhaps to my shoulder, many of them considerably less. I have some pictures that we took while we were with the people, the pygmies over in that part of the world, and every time I want to feel like a big man, I take a look at some of these pygmies standing beside of me. Well, these people live on an extremely primitive scale. First of all, they are nomadic hunters. Unless in contact with other peoples, they do no planting. They have no domestic animals other than the dog and an occasional game cock. They do a great deal of trapping. They do a deal of hunting. They depend primarily on forest products for their livelihood. They make the very slightest of shelters, just little lean-tos of bamboo or leaf, which they deserted at their pleasure. And that means that whenever the whim strikes them, or whenever the game or the forest products are scanty. And it's surprising how quickly even a very small community, and these people usually travel in groups of not more than 6 or 8 or 10 people, how quickly a little group of that kind can exhaust the vegetable products of an area, and how quickly you can frighten the game away. So they're very much on the move. Under such conditions, they would not accumulate very much in the way of household goods. Their clothing, scanty indeed, usually consisting of a piece of beaten bark the man wears as a clout and the woman as a wraparound skirt. They sometimes decorate their bodies by scarifying them because the skin is so dark that tattooing would not show. But they take bamboo knives and they cut themselves, if the proper person will cut them across the chest, and usually in designs, rub in dirt and soot until they're sure that the wounds will become infected, and they're kept open for several days or perhaps even 4 weeks, so that when they heal up, they will leave large raised scars which are considered beautiful. Well, in general, the life is extremely simple, and they have very little bearing on the story that we shall have to tell. There's still another primitive group in this region, which we'll mention just in passing. The group which has its stronghold here in the Malay Peninsula and is known as the Sakai. These people are very much under debate, but probably are distantly related to the Veda of Ceylon and certain intermediate groups, and at one time they probably spread much further out here into the oceanic area. A very early, rather primitive population, which today does practice a limited agriculture, but is still very primitive, and again has very little to do with the story of the population of this region. That is, except from the anthropological standpoint, but not from the people in politics of today. The people with whom I wish to deal primarily for the greater portion of the evening are the so-called Malayan people. Following the entry of these earlier groups which I have mentioned, there began to filter into this district people probably coming down the great river courses here from the interior, from the borders of the Tibetan Highlands. It appears to me that the population pressure was pushing people from further to the west and pushing them towards the headwaters of these great rivers. Now, I think if you'll study one of these maps in any detail, it will be fairly clear that people coming onto the headwaters of one of the streams, coming into the Brahmaputra, following that stream down, would finally follow down here and find themselves in in this region around Calcutta. But others, taking a river course not very far away, would follow on down, finding themselves in Burma along the valley of the Irrawaddy. And others, following river courses nearby, would find themselves along the Mekong or the Menam, along the coast of Indochina, or coast of the Malay Peninsula or Indochina, or even taking some of the stream headwaters very close by, following down, would find themselves well along the course of the Yangtze River.